Someone said that Alan had a glass eye once. Well, Ian from Newfound Glory tried to get that rumor started.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
You're listening to Sapnin Podcast.
Sapnin!
You're listening to episode 93 of Sapnin Podcast with myself, Sean Smith, and my good friend, Morgan Richards.
Yes, it's me, Morgan Richards, and I think that this episode will go down in history in some way, shape, or form.
Yes, our guests this week are the fantastic Alan and Dan from 4 Year Strong.
Yes.
Yes, we had a fantastic chat with the guys. We did over an hour with them. Yeah, it was a very eventful conversation. Alan started in his car. When he finally turned up, Alan started in his car and then moved to his house, then got into his house. Then the dogs kicked off, and then he shut the dogs out. But yeah, thank you very much to Alan and Dan. We had such a good time, such a good laugh. Yeah, it was absolutely fantastic.
Yeah, it's a whole bunch of beautiful chaos, we'll tell you that. But yes, Massachusetts bearded punk legends. They're a band we absolutely adore. A lot of their songs are serenaded in scenes we're part of, and we thought it's about time we got them on. They released a belter of an album in Brain Pain at the start of 2020 before all this virusy things kicked off. And we talk all about it, what they've been up to, as well as taking a trip down memory lane to some of their classic records, the early days, how they almost broke up, Christmas trees, and Alan did have a COVID test in resulting why he was in his car just before he started recording. So you'll find out the results to that on the podcast.
Yeah, I hope we can't catch it. Oh, no. Oh, no, I said too much. Yeah, you can't catch it via the internet, so we might be all right. And also, you'll have to listen in because he might not be positive. He might be positive. Ooh! So far on this podcast, we've done baby reveals, we've done engagement reveals, and now we're doing COVID test reveals.
What will you think of next?
Does Alan from 4 Year Strong have COVID? Find out later.
But thank you again to the guys. It's a great chat. So excited about it. But talking about some of their classic records as well, Sean, I did notice that our good friends at Hassle Records are celebrating their 15th year anniversary soon. And to celebrate that, they're reissuing 15 of the most classic albums that come out from that label. And one of them is, of course, Rise or Die Trying by 4 Year Strong.
Nice, that's awesome. Yeah, so yeah, congratulations to Hassle Records for getting to 15 years old. Finally 15. Like they've been waiting. Oh, God, we'd like to get a 15. We can finish this record label. Congratulations to them. And yeah, let's hopefully try and get somebody from Hassle on soon. We can have a talk about the record industry and stuff.
Yeah, that'd be good. That'd be something a bit different. But yeah, there's a host of those records as well. So if you head over to hasslerecords.com, you can pre-order that 4 Year Strong Rise or Die Trying special limited edition 2-color vinyl, Sean. Two colors in one.
two colour. That's one colour. If we put two colours into one.
But it's half and half, isn't it? I went real card.
Oh, you went real card. Half and half. Half chips, half rice. Half and half. It is half and half. You're right. Yeah. Great episode. Lovely chaps.
Yeah, but anyway, while you mentioned Welshy things,
yeah,
and celebrating, today's a very special day, Sean, isn't it? Because your band Raiders have finally released some new music in Destructobot that is available to listen to worldwide right now.
Yes, go to raidersbanduk.bandcamp.com if you're listening to this on Friday, because basically, what Bandcamp have done during the pandemic is every first Friday of the month, they give 100% of all revenue generated by the artist to the artist. So they're not skimming money off the top like, you know, the majority of people do. And, you know, Spotify paid 0.06 pence a stream or whatever. So if it's Friday and you want to check it out and would consider purchasing it, please check out raidersbanduk.bandcamp.com. If you're listening to this Saturday or onwards, it is out on all the other DSPs, Spotify, Apple Music, all of that stuff. So please check it out. And we have a video coming for it next Friday, actually.
Ooh!
Ooh, indeed. So basically the theme of the song is, we started writing it about a year ago and we've finished it ages ago, and it was my sense of humour and the way I deal with the constant misery that's currently happening around the world is by being as sarcastic as possible. So this is kind of, yes,
really?
Yes. Mm-hmm. So this song is about powering through, never giving up, but also cannot believe that everything has turned to shit. So yeah, please check it out. It's called Destructobot. It's by Raiders Band UK on everything, at Raiders Band UK on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, all our nonsense. Please check it out. If you don't like it, you're lying. If you listen to it and it makes you want to do some sexy grinding dance, boy, girl, fruit or flower, send us a video because I want to see. It makes me grind, and when we play live, I do a lot of grinding. So expect that when we can go back to shows, but it will be grinding at a 2 meter distance.
He does. I can vouch for that. I've seen Sean grinding quite a bit. That's a really weird sentence. But anyway, how are you feeling about it, Sean? How are you feeling about actually getting this track out now? You've had it in the bank for a while.
Yeah, excited. It was mixed. It was recorded by Todd Campbell of Phil Campbell and the Bastard Sons.
Nice.
It was mixed by Stu Richardson of No Devotion, Thursday and Lost Prophets. And it was mastered by the wonderful Jesse Cannon in New York. Yeah, I'm chuffed with it. We're really eager just to get stuff out. We've got like 8 other songs. Maybe next month there might be another song coming. And a month after that. And a month after that. Maybe I've said too much. I don't know. But yeah, we are excited for people to hear it. And if you like it, please share it, because we're not doing this through a label, we're not doing this through management, we're not doing this through, like, we haven't got a team, we're literally just doing it like ourselves, just to put it out, so because we know people are bored of waiting for stuff from us. So please check it out, share and like where you can.
Yeah, awesome. Can't wait to get it into my ears, Sean. And let us know what you think of Raiders' new single and the podcast at Sapnin Pod on Twitter and Instagram. Sean, how do you spell it?
At SAPPENINPOD. That's at SAPPENINPOD.
Yeah, send us a message. Let us know what you think about everything. What are you doing today? What's your gran up to tomorrow? Let us know. Send us a message. Or you can go and visit patreon.com/sapnin, where we tell you everything going on with everyone involved, even if you like it or not. And it may include curtains.
That's a weird thing to put in. Who's going to want to sign up to a Patreon? Right, you've got to say things like, right, there's merch offers. There's the option to Skype and chat with us. There's the option to just join the family and become and just meet some amazing people. There's just so many options. And you've gone with curtains.
Yeah.
Listen, wait. What? If you're listening to this now, right, And you were thinking, I've listened to a couple of these episodes. I quite like these boys somehow. They're both fucking idiots. Yes, yeah, granted. Yeah. I like both of these boys. Is there a way I can support them? Do you know what? There probably is a way I can support them, but it doesn't involve enough curtains. If you've thought that now and you're like, oh, I'm going to check out the Patreon because he's mentioned curtains, you're mental. What's taking you so long? What is it with curtains? You couldn't have picked a worse thing to sell, anymore.
My brain just went. But speaking of merch, we do have merch available right now. It's a very limited offer. If you want the links and more information on that, then head over to our Twitter and Instagram at SapninPod or the description. I'll put the link to our merch in the description of this episode. So go and buy a t-shirt. Look fabulous. And I can guarantee you it is the perfect piece of clothing for more likes on selfies.
Oh, guaranteed. Not a guarantee.
Guaranteed.
Not a guarantee.
We'll stalk your account and like the picture you post in them, basically. So that is more likes. But I've said too much. Anyway, should we get into this wonderful conversation with Dan and Alan of 4 Years Strong?
Patreon.com/sapnin. We didn't really mention the address. But yes, here they come. 4 Years Strong. Stronger than ever. Ten years strong. I don't know what I'm saying. Jesus Christ. Here they are. Alan and Dan. Cheers, boys. Sapnin!
Sapnin!
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas, big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
Sapnin! Sapnin!
Sapnin!
Sapnin!
Yes! Yes! Hey! All four! Yes! All four! Yes, I wasn't sure then. It was a little bit of a delay, but that's fantastic. Yes, this week's guests on Sapnin Podcast are the wonderful Alan and Dan from the fantastic 4 Years Strong.
Yes.
Thanks for coming on, guys. Thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks for having us. Sorry in advance for my bad service.
That's okay. Yeah, we were just talking before we started and yeah, Alan's just come back from a COVID test and you are all clear, thank God.
Yeah, I'm good to go.
Nice.
So I don't even have to wear a mask anymore, right? That's how that works.
Right, I don't know, if you grow the beard a little bit longer, you could fold it up.
Oh, you could?
Yeah.
Right up.
Self masks. That's not bad, actually.
That's a weird...
Yeah. Or just grow the mustache.
Yeah.
Grow the mustache extra long.
Yeah, I think the mustache is probably the easiest way rather than... Because you'd have to, you'd have to eat the beard as well, I think. And then that's just...
It's like whale baleen. Like, it just filters everything through.
Catches the kelp as you're flying through the water. This might be the weirdest start to one of the podcasts we've done, but I'm all for it.
I love it so far.
Yeah. Yeah, how have you guys been during this absolutely bonkers period?
I've been pretty well. I mean, I guess, like, not really too much to report, just kind of been living life, working on some band stuff, trying to figure out ways to keep things going, and also just helping my kids get through it. You know, we've got school starting up next week, and so my oldest daughter is going into first grade, but she's going to be doing it all from home and trying to sort it out with what the school system's going to be, and it's just insane. So pretty much been figuring that out.
Yeah, I've been trying to keep busy. I don't have kids, so I don't have to deal with that. But yeah, just trying to stay sane. It's a funny thing having released a brand new album literally before everything shut down, because everything, every once in a while I have a panic moment, like, oh my god, what are we doing? Nothing's happening. But like, I don't know, literally nothing's happening. It's not just us. There's no one's able to go out on tour.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, because I was going to mention with Brain Ping, you know, as you said, released it right just before everything kind of broke out and all the lockdowns were in place worldwide. But in many sense, it must be such a weird album cycle for you guys, not being able to tour with such a record just you're so proud of. But I know you've been busy behind the scenes as well, and been doing a lot of kind of virtual meet and greets as of late to try and connect with fans on some level.
Yeah, the record came out, I think, like 2 weeks before everything got shut down. We played like a total of, I think, 8 shows playing the new song. So it's really strange because it still feels really new to me. Like, I'm like, oh, I can't wait to play some of these. Like, we only played like 3 or 4 of the songs live. So I'm like really excited to play these songs. I'm like, oh yeah, it's already been out for like 6 months. Like, it's crazy. But yeah, I mean, we're trying to stay busy, trying to do what we can to push the record. We still have a lot of other things that are, you know, kind of in the works to push it as well. But yeah, I mean, just like everybody else, just trying to figure it out.
Yeah, what's it being on the other side of it, doing a lot more of the virtual meet and greets and stuff now, and trying to connect with fans over the internet, really?
Yeah.
It's a little weird.
Yeah, it's definitely strange, but I was pleasantly surprised when we did it the other day how, I mean, it probably has to do with the fact that everybody's kind of going through the same thing. So everybody's really excited to do anything and to speak to anybody that they have any interest in speaking to. So when we did the meet and greets the other day, it was actually really fun and it wasn't awkward. There were a couple times where like their internet service was a little strange, but that was
actually my favorite part, because there was a couple times where we could see them, but they had no idea we could see them. So we were seeing their like actual reaction, like being like, oh fuck, it's not working. Holy shit. What do I do? What do I do? And they were like panicking. It was hilarious.
Nice. Yeah, just love it when everything falls apart. But with Brain Ping as well, I mean, I know you haven't been able to play a lot of these songs live, as you said, but has it been weird that you've been able to have that kind of downtime to reflect on this record in many ways? Because it's had a great reception online. A lot of people have really been vocal point about their favorite tracks and everything. Like, in many ways, have you been able to actually just sit down more and reflect and see the record grow in a different aspect?
I mean, yes, I mean, there's no other way to do it. It's just kind of watch it grow in a different way. It's different for us because we're already, I don't know if it also has to do with the fact that we're kind of having to shake this feeling that we're not doing everything that we can be doing to like push the record. But it's weird for us because we're like, should we be writing new songs? Should we be like working on a follow-up already? Like, it's a really strange kind of back and forth and just like inner dialogue in the band of like, what is the next step? Like, what? And like, then we talk to our team and they're like, no, like everything's fine. Like, like we just go through these weird panic moments. They're like, what the fuck are we doing? But,
yeah, I guess, to be honest, this year is just going to be written off. I think everybody who brings albums out this year is just going to hopefully get to just do it next year, just as like a whole year shift. Like, it's going to come to the 31st of December and we'll go, right, let's all agree 2020 didn't happen. We're starting again now. Right, 2020, go! All the plans.
That would be the optimum situation for sure.
Yeah, I'm kind of hoping things just like pick up exactly where they left off when things start opening up again. Because to me, it like, it feels like we put out an album and then we've just chosen not to go on tour for, who knows, could be a year, could be a year and a half, you know, till like normal touring starts happening again. But then I have to remind myself that it's not like our career move that we're deciding to put out an album and not do any touring in support of it. It's like, just nothing's happening. So like I just really hope that everyone else sees it like it never happened too. Like, okay, a venue opens up. Okay, what was the last show I was going to go see? Oh, I wanted to go see Four Year Strong, so I'll go see them now.
Yeah.
You know?
I think the thing that's weird about it is, for us especially, is we took like a year and a half basically off from doing normal tour to write and record and work on the third really hard.
Yeah.
So for me, it feels like it's been forever. Like we kind of just like took this year and a half off, then we played 8 shows and now we're just halfway through the next year. So it's crazy for me because in the past going on like 2 years or more, we haven't really been as active as, I mean, we're trying to be, do you know what I mean? So I think that's like this weird mental game that I'm playing in my head of like, what am I doing? Like, what are we supposed to be doing? I think the thing that I'm most worried about is, as far as things just picking back up with where we left off is, I mean, there's a lot of venues that are like, you're watching them like start to close. Like it's starting with the smaller ones, but it's eventually going to like work its way up to like, you know, some of the middle ones and then some of the bigger ones and some of the ones that are staples that we play on every tour. And I think that's one of the most frightening parts for me is that when everybody's like, all right, all clear, like you can start touring, and it's like, okay, but is there a place to tour? You know what I mean? Like,
where?
Well, that, and it's going to be a flooded market anyways. Like there's going to be every band on planet Earth is going to be trying to go out on tour. So if there's less venues, there's less places to possibly play because someone else might be playing in that city that night. Or, I mean, that's a problem already when we go out on tour, is trying not to book a tour that's like right around the time of another similar genre band. Cause like, Even a couple of years ago, it seemed like people only had so much money they wanted to spend on going to a show. So if 2 shows in the same week were bands they wanted to see, some people were going to have to choose which one they were going to go see, depending on like, I don't know, when's the last time they saw them or how often they usually come around or whatever reasons. But that was even a problem then. Now with like people being out of work for half the year potentially, and you know, I wonder if that's going to be even more of an issue, or if people are going to say, fuck it, I'm gonna spend all of my money because I haven't been able to go to any shows for the past 6 months.
Well, I think what we've kind of come across with listeners to this podcast is, I think everyone is just so eager, so I think it's the other way. If anything, I think there's going to be a rush to every show.
Yeah.
I think, yeah, if you can be one of those first,
that'd be sweet.
Yeah, if you can be one of those first bands to do a show, I think people will go mad. So, yeah.
That's what's kind of funny is, like, there's going to be the bands who want to be the first bands to do shows.
Yeah. But then it's also like, are you going to be...
Yeah, so there's also that weird fine line of, like, are you the first band who tries to do a show when it's just not perfect yet, and now you're an animal?
Yeah. Yeah, and now the virus is called 4 Year Strong Virus. Like, oh, what?
Yeah.
It was COVID before we decided to tour? Shit.
Smash Mouth is making it happen.
Oh, yeah. Oh. I saw that, yeah.
Fucking hell. Oh, silly billies. Absolutely silly billies. What are they going to... Oh.
But anyway, but going back to Brain Pain as well, you mentioned the time frame between the last tour and everything, but it was actually 5-year gap between that and your last record. It seemed that, you know, as you said, you took a lot of time to perfect the sound, the way you wanted to go and stuff in the songwriting. How would you, now having more time to look back on it, see the difference between those two albums? Did you think having that time off really gave you enough to kind of evolve as you went on?
Oh yeah, for sure. I don't think even being able to reflect on it in this like hopefully once in a lifetime kind of situation that everyone's in, I don't think I would have changed how we had done it or wished we had written different songs. Like it's definitely the piece of work. I think I can speak for both Dan and I and the whole band really, that it's like the book that we're most proud of in a lot of ways, but I think we could have done it without all that time off between the last and all the touring we had done, and doing the 10-year Rise or Die anniversary tour. And like, there's so many ingredients that like kind of influenced the album, and then taking the time to really put all those pieces together and write the record we wanted to write was exactly how it needed to be done.
Yeah, we never really gave ourselves as much time as we needed to write the record that we wanted to write, I guess, except for Rise or Die, because Rise or Die was just all of our best songs up until that point. You know what I mean? So I guess we had had the whole first part of our career, because by the time that record came out, we'd already been a band for like 6 or 7 years. Hmm. So we've been writing songs, obviously, with tons of songs, a lot of really, 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 really bad ones, but
lots of really bad ones.
But when we,
including some of the ones that are on that album. Yeah.
No, come on.
When we did Rise or Die, you know, it was kind of just like, all right, well, let's take all of our best stuff so far and put it on one record. And with this record, you know, with the self-titled record that we did right before this, it's a lot more rushed. There were a lot of different things happening. Every record since then, we've always had, okay, we want to have it out by this date because this tour is booked and this is happening. So wherever we're at in the writing process, like, we've got to like kick it into high gear, get the songs in, get it recorded, blah, blah. So you always have that, like, that little end date that's always ticking down as you're trying to finish this. So there's inevitably times you're like, I don't love this, but it's good enough. Like, put that in there, whatever. You know what I mean? You don't want to settle, but there's obviously a place in your brain that, especially as a songwriter, unless someone says, okay, you're done, I can tweak a song for fucking ever. Like, I, you know what I mean? It'll never be done. But with this record, one of the things that we did that we've never done before is we just wrote as many songs as we could. Like, we wrote probably like, as far as like starts of songs and like ideas and where we were going, like over 50 songs. And what was cool about that is it kind of gave us a similar vibe to when we did Rise or Die, where we could be like, all right, let's take the best of all of these songs and that's the record. And without having the amount of time and the amount of time to even conceptualize what we were going to do, because that's what we did more than anything on this record that we've never done before, is just talking about what we wanted it to be, and just sonically and as songwriting wise, and how we wanted a specific dynamic from front to back of the record, and how we wanted it to come together. We had never done that before this record, really at all. So just having that amount of time was really important.
Yeah. And I think another important part of writing as many songs as we did was the fact that we didn't hold back, right? Like, anytime we're writing a 4 Year Strong song in the past, or writing a record, we very specifically have these like, for like these boundaries of like what we think we can get away with. And we know this song is probably going to go on the record because we're writing 10 songs because we're on under this crazy deadline. So every song has to be like the song that's on the record. So if we write a part and we're like, that's a little out there, let's reel it back in. And we have all these rules for ourselves, but this time around we just wrote whatever we wanted, even if it was way too far outside the box, and just let those creative juices kind of flow, and it would get through us and get out of us, and then we could move on to the next thing. And some of the songs, you know, that we didn't end up with obviously didn't make the record for a reason, but I think we wouldn't have gotten to the record, the songs that did make the record that are our favorite songs, if we hadn't written those other not so great ones or outside the box ones.
Yeah. Was this your guys' first time working with Will Putney?
No, it was, well, officially, yes, it was our first time making a record with Will Putney, as the Will Putney everyone now knows and loves. But he was the assistant engineer on Enemy of the World.
Oh, cool.
Because we did that record with a producer named Machine, and Will was kind of his right-hand man at the time. So they worked together for a long time, and then Will started doing his own thing. And another ingredient we wanted to incorporate into this new album was like some kind of familiarity and like comfortability of, you know, who 4 Year Strong was and is. So Will felt like a good kind of good match for that, because he was a part of who Four Year Strong was, and now he's off doing his own thing. And it just seemed like working with someone that we know well, we know we get along with, we know we have fun with, and on top of that, someone who's absolutely killing it in their field, you know, it just kind of seemed like a no-brainer.
Yeah, one of the things that we thought about a lot when we were trying to figure out who was going to produce the record is we've gotten bitten a little bit in the past by going with a producer who doesn't fully understand what the band, I get what like the DNA of the band is.
Yeah. Yeah.
As far as songwriting goes, Alan and I always try and do weird stuff. Like we're those guys who we don't like to repeat ourselves. If we can, you know, not do that. So we're the guys who will spend, you know, hours in a studio, just like trying to figure out this one guitar tone that nobody else hears in their head but us and all this stuff. But we've never had a producer who we've either had a producer who knows really well what the band is and is really good at reeling us back in, or we've had someone who doesn't really know what the band is and will let us go, you know, as far as we want to take it. And we kind of wanted somebody who knew what the band was, but we know is creative enough to let us go as far as we want to go and then just find where on that graph, like the farthest point that we can go with it still having the DNA or the makeup of what sounds like Four Year Strong. And I think that was really great about Will, because like Alan was saying, we wrote so many songs and some of them were very much outside of, I guess, the walls of what Four Year Strong can be, which is exactly what Alan and I always like to do. We like to push things farther and farther and farther. And going with someone like Will is, he understands what we're going for. You can hear the demo and be like, okay, I know exactly what they're trying to do, and let me help them reel it into what makes sense. So
awesome. No, he's done a fantastic job. I think, yeah, you guys have absolutely smashed it on this record.
Yeah.
I've had Get Out of My Head stuck in my head since the moment I found out we were going to do this. When Ailey confirmed it, I was like, right, awesome. And yeah, it's awesome. If I was you, I'd be chuffed to bits. So congratulations on it, guys.
Thanks. We are really excited about the album, and it is an unfortunate bad timing kind of a situation, but I really don't even have anything to say about it, because it's just like, what can you do?
I think the thing that I'm grateful for that we got this record out before this thing happened is I'm not sure, you know, what we would have done if things had canceled before it got out there. Like, I don't know as far as like our conversations with like what our label like would have been like, oh, do we delay it? Like, what do we do? And the fact that it's out there and it's gotten the reception that it has, at least that part feels awesome, because I'm really excited to continue writing and to make more stuff. Because with this record, I feel like we've, as far as like internally, we've kind of lit a new fire in the band that, you know, for a band that's been, we've been doing it since like 2001. So we're going to be 20.
We're fucking old.
Our band's going to be 20 next year. And wow. To be a band that long and still feel like creatively, like
fresh,
enthusiastic and inspired, is fairly rare. And, you know, we've definitely been down the hole where, you know, we've just been like fed up with what we're doing or just not creative or not inspired. And this record was the most inspired we've been. And the fact that it's been received as well as it has makes me really excited to like keep pushing and keep writing songs, and like makes me feel like, I don't know, I know it's like a cliche thing to say, but it feels like, oh, we're just getting started kind of a thing. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah.
I just hope that it didn't come out right before this whole shutdown happened. And now, and you know how music is like, it's a fucking time machine, right? So if you hear a song that you used to listen to at this certain point in your life, it like transports you right back into that moment. Yeah. Like, I'm hoping that this record isn't like, people can't listen to it because like, oh, all I can think about is like being fucking locked up in my apartment.
Yeah,
not being able to see any of my friends.
Yeah, but at the same time, I think that when this whole thing is over and people do look back on it, I think it's going to be looked back upon in a little bit of a different, like the way that everyone feels about being in quarantine and lockdown or whatever right now, because they're just, it's been for fucking ever and they're fed up with it. I feel like in like 4 years, when people talk about like the lockdown or the quarantine, there's going to be this weird, I don't know, weird, like, I feel like there's going to be some weird renaissance that happens.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
And it's going to be talked about as like this weird awakening that like all these people have this time to reflect and think. And when things happen again, they're going to have either a new appreciation for what's going on or a new way to look at life. And I feel like there could be a possibility where people could have like this weird, I don't know, appreciation.
I freaking hope that's the case, because it would be nice if people could somehow take positivity out of this situation as like, yeah, like a reflection on how you've done things in the past and how to grow and how to approach things in a safer way, you know, and kind of moving forward with some kind of positivity. It's like we kind of need that,
right? Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, I think people are going to look back at it and say it was the record that maybe got them through all this stuff.
I did get a text from someone yesterday that said that.
Nice.
That,
like, oh, there you go. Dude,
I've been listening to Brain Pain. It's got me through a lot of this, so thank you.
There you go. Nice. Yeah. So, yeah.
That was cool.
Like you said, like, my band's bringing out, oh, it's Friday. Yeah. So this podcast comes out Friday. My band has a song out today, and it's, yeah, it's just miserable. So I'm sure people are going to listen to it and go, oh, yeah, everything has turned to shit. You are right. Yeah, correct. So, mine might be known as the virus record, whereas yours might be the, oh, I saved me through a hard time record. Mine's going to be known as, remember that song that came out when everything had fucking turned to shit? I hate that band. So, I think you're going to be a bit better off.
Yeah. But with all that as well, Dan, you mentioned keeping the band motivated and inspired, especially, you know, almost reaching 20 years together. What little steps do you guys take to stay energized, to stay motivated and stuff behind 4 years strong? Because I know there was a time where one of the records wasn't perceived well, and you were all going through quite a hard time. It almost ended. But like now, is there anything you really try and take to help creativity and just and the spirit of the band?
I think one of the things that helps us be as close and as energized and as creative as we are now is a lot of the things that we've been through together in the past. I think when In Some Way, Shape, or Form came out, you know, not only did we, you know, was it not received well, and that obviously took a big chunk out of our mindset, basically. But like even leading up to that, I think we weren't really in I know for a fact we were not in like a healthy relationship within the band, and we definitely had worked ourselves to, you know, the bone, and we're not the type of band that really talks about their problems very much at that point. And I think, and you know, we, for lack of a better word, broke up for like a year and a half to 2 years after that cycle ended. You know, without really much hope that we were going to get back together and do anything. And we didn't break up. We didn't like announce like never playing shows again. We just kind of each went our separate way and just things kind of fizzled. But I think what was awesome about that time is, you know, I'm sure a lot of people can relate to this. You know, we started the band when we were so young, and we just worked so hard, and we toured that we basically did all of our growing up together on tour, which isn't really much growing up. We didn't really get to actually, you know, take time to figure out who we were as people and sort ourselves out as these, I guess, budding adults. And when we took this time off, I think that really gave us the mental and physical time to just like figure out who we were, kind of like establish our roots as who we are as adults, and also reflect on 11 years prior to that of what we've been going through. And it gave us the opportunity to say like, oh, maybe I was kind of a dickhead, like, or, you know, maybe I should have like voiced my opinion more when this was pissing me off or whatever. And I think one of the reasons that we are as strong of a unit now is because we had the time to look back at who we were from the outside, and now we get to come back rekindle our relationships and not make as many stupid adolescent mistakes as far as our personal relationships go. That, and I think we just have a really good time together now. Like, we all, like, we're just constantly laughing, we're constantly joking, and, you know, stayed pretty close geographically, so we see each other when we're off tour, and we're just more friends now than I think we have been in a while.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, what would you say was when you said you had like that mini secret breakup, what was like the catalyst to go you back together? Was it like a text from someone? Did somebody say, let's make a record and we want to do a show?
Yeah, Alan, are you still here? You're frozen. I don't know if you're still here.
I am. I'm about to lose service, but I'm almost home and I can switch over my computer.
Okay, well, I'll answer this question. We'll see in a little while. So we had been broken up for a while, and Alan and I really weren't getting along very well even prior to that. And so Alan and I, our relationship kind of falling apart was definitely a lot of what had to do with the band kind of not doing anything. And so I had gotten a job working in like pharmaceuticals, and he was doing something else. And then one day I just got a text from him that was like, hey, we should get together and like write some songs. And I just was like, okay, sounds good. And I just quit my job that day. And we were just like, all right, we're back together. That's just it. It was like kind of simple as that. I think Alan reached out, and once he did, I was just stoked to get back to work. So.
Nice. Awesome.
That's awesome. Yeah. Yeah. And from a fan's perspective as well, I think it's quite nice that there wasn't a whole dramatic announcement or breakup period of, oh, we're on hiatus, we're not doing stuff now. It was kind of just left alone for a while. I mean, you just didn't kind of touch anything. Social, there was no post. It was just kind of, it is what it is. I think on many levels, from like you see a lot of bands now coming, breaking up, doing a whole thing, and then coming back just a year or two later. I think it is quite a nice approach for, because there's no pressure.
Yeah,
from it, on your point of view.
I think, you know, as if in retrospect, we definitely probably could have like made some more money if we were like, oh, we're coming.
Yeah,
but yeah, I mean, I think one of the reasons we never really made a statement or announced that we were on a hiatus is because we didn't really know, because we as a band hadn't even discussed like, where are we? Like, what are we doing? We just kind of disappeared. We this one, because we do a holiday show at home every year. And that, even after we had like stopped touring and we were like done and at home and not really talking to each other, that was still something that was on the books. So what was crazy about that is we still did a holiday show during that time that we had been broken up. But what was funny about it is we didn't do any practicing. We didn't do anything whatsoever. The first time that I saw those guys when we walked up on stage to sound check, and it was like really strange because like we hadn't like communicated. We all just kind of like got an email being like, this is the time for sound check, blah, blah. And we all just showed up, played the show, and then like that was cool, but then we all kind of like again went back to our own things, and that was a really strange feeling too, because we didn't talk about it. Even we were in the same room, we were playing a show together, like nobody even like acknowledged the fact that like, are we broken up or are we still a band? What the hell's going on? It was, I mean, retrospectively, it was obviously very unhealthy relationship, and you know, we hadn't, like I said, really figured out like the right way to communicate how you feel, you know, mentally towards, I mean, if you think about a band, especially one that is mildly successful, it means that they're touring all the time and they're together a lot. If you think about it, it's basically like we're married, we're living together. It's everything to do with a romantic relationship without any romance and without like any sex. So like, it's like, what's, you know, trying to find the silver lining sometimes is really, really difficult to do. And especially when, you know, everyone is secretly having hostility towards people, but not talking about their problems and all this stuff. And, you know, I feel like a lot of bands go through the same exact thing. I feel like it's a very common story. It's the reason a lot of bands break up. I mean, creative differences, right? That's like the gimmick phrase that everybody throws out there for the reason to break up. But for us, I don't know, I think our inability to communicate with each other about things that we feel actually worked to our advantage when we were broken up, because nobody wanted to talk about if we were broken up and what the future was going to be because we were all so passive aggressive. And then when it finally came time to get back together and we had secretly all been missing it and yearning to get back out there, we all kind of jumped at the chance and gave us the opportunity to talk about, like, okay, this is why I hated being in the band. Why did you hate being in the band? And then it kind of, was able to sort itself out as instead of, because when the band broke up, it was four kids, you know, in a band. And when the band got back together, it was like four adults being in a band. Like, we had that like time to finish growing and to finish sorting ourselves out. And it was kind of like side A and side B. So yeah.
Oh, I completely agree on the being in a band and not growing up. That is literally me to a nutshell. I left college. Yeah, I left college and working in a bingo hall when I was 20.
Wow.
And then, according to the government, I went missing in action for 13 years. And I came back equally as childish, if not more childish, than I was prior to leaving for the band. And then, all of a sudden, adulthood. Yep. What? Yep. What the fuck is this taxes shit?
It's interesting to be like a 35, like with this pandemic, it's fun to be a 35-year-old guy that has a mortgage and, you know, a couple of cars and a wife and a couple of kids and some dogs. And then all of a sudden, like, which, you know, relative, like, things look like things are going well. And then all of a sudden it's like this pandemic happens and it's like, oh, I'm not qualified to do anything on paper.
Yeah. Yeah. I was thinking about this the other day. I was I was talking to a friend and I was like, well, yeah, I have no skills. Like I don't know how anything works. Like, I look at a car, you could put all of the pieces to a car on the floor in front of me and I would never ever make a car. It would be impossible. So yeah, it's taken up until probably about March me to realize, unless it's shouting at a crowd,
yeah,
well, I can't do nothing. Yeah. You've got no skills.
Well, one thing that's fun about our band is we're all relatively good with our hands. We all have skills in other places. Like, Joe builds furniture and, you know, we all have kind of an interest in like woodworking. Jake works in construction. Alan, you know, records bands and stuff at home, but also makes maple syrup and runs like a farm with his wife and all this. And like, we all have these other skills, but they're all, none of them are on paper. Like, we don't have any, like, we don't have a resume. If I handed in a resume to get a job, they'd be like, this person just fell out of the sky. Like,
yep, yep.
How has he even been eating food up until?
Yeah. Oh, I've had the very same problem. When my band called it today, I was like, all right, cool. I better write up a CV then. Okay, cool. McDonald's, 16, college, bingo hall. Missing for 13 years, friend's barbershop. What? Yeah. Where's he been? Where's he been? It's unbelievable. Yeah, no, and sadly, I've got no transferable skills. Oh, look out. Alan's turned up with a desk. He's in the same place. He's turned up in the same place as Dan.
Yeah, the guitar has just continued that way.
It's just a wall of constant guitars. That's brilliant.
Alan, your mic's off, I think.
Oh, he's got the SM7 there, and we can't hear it. Oh.
Nope.
Morgan, please leave this in. Leave this gap in. That was perfect. All three of us at the same time went, nope. Oh, do you know about in Cardiff, there's a club night called Team Up.
Really?
Have you heard of this club night?
No, I've never heard of it.
Oh no, I get the DJ there sometimes. It's not just Cardiff, it's like a travelling club night. But yeah,
can you hear me now? All...
Yay.
Yes!
Okay, I don't think I'm using the microphone, so just looks.
It looks cool.
Yeah, just get a broken case of an SM7 and like, oh, I've got my own. Yeah, I've got my own. There's a club night in Cardiff, the South Wales and Bristol region called Team Up. We absolutely love you guys. So when all of this shit is over, you'll have to come over and DJ there. I know they'd love that.
We come over for a dunk. We'll see if we can.
Nice. Now,
it's funny because there's all of these like random things that I happen upon that I'm like, is this a 40s? Like, there's like this weird indie wrestling festival called like, it's called Rise or Die. I'm like, what the hell? Am I supposed to get money for this? Like, what's the?
Can you? Does that mean you can just turn up at the show, one of your songs starts, and you can just run out and start beating people up?
Oh,
surely.
I think it means I can just show up and just stick my hand into like the money cash register. This is mine. So
yeah. However much you can take out with one hand, you can keep. That's the rule.
That's what it is.
There you go.
Yeah.
Nice. Oh, another thing. Perfect. I want to mention about Brain Pain is the artwork. Who came up with that?
That was a long process. We struggled with it a little bit because we always have had like weird, wacky artwork for all of our records, right? And with this kind of like new version of the band that we were kind of creating for ourselves. Sorry, I got dogs. We wanted to do something new and cool, but we had no idea what that was. Guys, shut up. Bandit, stop. I think the UPS guy's here. But like, it was one of those things where like music is easy for me and Dan to like visualize this like blurry thing in our head and somehow find a way to make it come to life. But we're not like artists, like designers. So like, that's the part that wasn't coming supernaturally. And we couldn't figure out like, what should it be? We know what the music is. We know, like, even before it existed, we knew what the music was. But we had no idea what the artwork.
We knew what we wanted it to make you feel. Like, we knew right. The vibe that we wanted the artwork to have. We just didn't have, like, when we found an artist to be like, okay, we want it to be this with that, with this. And like, we want it to feel cool, but that's
right. Like the Enemy of the World artwork, we literally wrote up a paragraph to the guy that did the painting. Like, Alan's going to be like a centaur and Dan's going to be like holding this big boulder, and like literally every detail about it was written out in a paragraph, and the guy nailed it first try. but this, it was kind of more of a collaboration with the artist Donnie Phillips, who ended up doing it, where we kind of like, I had these long conversations with him on the phone, like hours, like conceptualizing. And he was so cool about it, especially considering he did this whole first version, and all of us were just like, I don't think that's it, but I can't tell you what it is. I just know it's not that. And he was like so surprisingly cool and calm and collected about it, and was good at coming up with ideas. And he had heard a couple of the demos and stuff like that. So he was trying to conceptualize with us, like lyrically and the vibe of the music and like how to incorporate that into the art. And obviously he has more of a talent because that's what he does than we do. So we were kind of let him kind of take some stabs at it. The first rendition of it was very evil feeling, like it was very like metal band kind of a thing. And I think our first response was like, it needs to have some element of like lightness to it, because that's kind of what our band has always been, this like hybrid of like dark and heavy and like light and poppy and fluffy. He fucking nailed it. I love how that came out.
I can't believe that he kept working on it, because the amount of time we'd be like, all right, here's what I think is going on, and we'd just be like, I don't like it, but I don't know why.
And it was all of what he was doing was amazing.
Yeah.
Like there was no like, oh, I hate that. It was just like, I don't know. I feel like I'm going to know when it feels right. And it just doesn't feel right yet. It doesn't feel like the marriage between the art and the music is there yet. We finally got down to the like last couple details. It really came together.
Yeah. Yeah, no, but it fits perfectly with the album and everything. But while we're going through memory lane and remembering some stuff, I did want to bring up the fact that Hassle Records are actually re-releasing your debut album, Rise or Die, on a limited vinyl edition to celebrate their 15th year as a label. That's a record that's being celebrated so much by yourselves in the whole kind of punk rock, pop punk community and everything. What's some of your earliest memories when you're thinking about that record? And is it quite surreal sometimes to see how much love it still gets all these years later?
I mean, that's definitely weird because when we wrote that and released it, we had no idea that it was going to kickstart a, you know, now how many years has it been? 30? Yeah, it's been a long time, and we had definitely had no idea that it was going to be the start of like our actual careers, you know. Yeah. not like this is, yeah, this is doing pretty cool. We're like in a band that's playing some shows here and there.
We have been playing pretty much all the songs. There's only two songs on that record that hadn't been played live for years before that record came out. But when we put that record out, it was more or so us just being like, all right, well, we have all these songs that aren't like recorded on a record yet. So let's just put these there. And then, you know, we'll start thinking about like what our next record's going to be and like actually start the process of like building. And when that record came out, everybody's like, this is amazing. Be like, we've been playing these songs for like 5 years. we did not expect it to be the beginning of like this, especially with that record. We that cycle was like 5 years long. And that was one of the reasons we did Explains It All, is because
it wasn't that long. It was like 3 years, because Enemy came out in 2010.
Oh yeah, that's true, I guess. But it was a really long cycle for a band who, they put this first thing out, it does fairly well, and normally you try to like get out a follow-up relatively quickly. But we toured 100% of that time. Like, we just went from one tour to the next tour to the next tour to the next tour, and we didn't write a fucking thing. So the label's like, we got to put something out. And we're like, a cover record, because we have no songs. I don't even know if we remember how to write songs, because it's been so long since we did. And we've never just gone into the studio to write a record before. All these songs have been written for like 5 years. So we just didn't even know how to do that part yet. So what we went in to do Explains It All with Machine, A, to kind of like try him out as a producer, and also to kind of just like try and shake off some of the cobwebs of like not writing and not creatively thinking of how to do stuff. And I think Enemy of the World 100% would not have been what Enemy of the World was if we did not do Explains It All, because that definitely helped us formulate like, oh, this is cool in the song, we should remember to do something like this later. And then
one of our actual songs. that and we built a really great relationship with the producer Machine while making Explains It All, and we knew that was going to be like, making Explains It All was actually a really fun and like inspiring experience, even though, like, I don't know, I guess most bands could probably say that like cover records are like the, yeah, like you just kind of like phone it in a little bit. And but we had a lot of fun making that, and it was like an inspiring like new relationship they were building with Machine, and we were in it was an important part in our career, like Dan was saying. Like, Enemy of the World wouldn't have existed if it wasn't, or wouldn't have existed the way it did if we hadn't made Explains It All. Like, I do think that was an important chapter, even though at the time it did not go over well, because it was 2 years after Rise or Die Trying came out, and people like that loved Rise or Die Trying and were like fans waiting for the next album were like, what, this is what you're giving us? So we did get a little bit of flack for that, but
yeah. How was working with Machine?
It was great. Yeah, he's an amazing guy. He's so animated and so enthusiastic about everything that he does. He just gets you like super pumped up. Even if, I don't know, even if the song probably isn't that great, you leave being like, this song's gonna be fucking awesome. This pumped on it. He's really fun to work with. He's an insanely nice person, like genuinely just like a nice guy. And he's a producer that approaches every song from like an emotional standpoint. Like, he's like, this is what I want this song to feel like. This is because he's not like the most musical person. Like, if he doesn't say like, oh, go up to the F on this. Like, he's just, or like when you play a part, he just knows like, it's not there. I want it to go, ah, and we're like, all right.
which can be frustrating as a musician, because you're like, I don't, just tell me what you want to hear, instead of me having to like, you know, like translate that gibberish that you're speaking into like musical terms. Like, I remember one point when we were making, because we also made the Go Down in History EP with Machine, and we were doing that with him. We were working on a song, and we were kind of doing a lot of like writing / pre-production in the studio in this little like space he had at his studio. We were just like locked in this tiny room for like a week, and he would come in and be like, "No, I want," and he said to Jake, our drummer, like, "No, I don't want you to play the crash cymbal on this part." And he's like, "Okay, cool." So he plays the hi-hat. He's like, no, I don't want you to play the hi-hat." He's like, "Okay, should I just play on the ride?" No cymbals at all. He's like, "Oh, okay, I'll play it on the floor tom." And he does that, and he's like, "No, I don't want that either." And he's just like, "Well, what the fuck do you want? That's all the options. That's it. I don't have any more drums." So like, it can be frustrating at times, but in the end, it always ends up being for the better, because he has, like Dan said, like the emotional like ride he knows he wants to go on, because he's coming at it from a fan's perspective, because that's what he is. He's a music fan. He's not necessarily like musician. He's more of like Rick Rubin, the world famous producer, is a similar thing. He doesn't like play instruments. He comes at it from like an emotional connection standpoint, and like what he wants to feel when he hears the song. And yeah, it can be frustrating to work with, but at the end of the day, it always ends up great.
I think also at the same time, when you work with a producer who's like, "I don't like that part. Instead, you play this part on the ride, and you go to the F and you play a lead that goes like this." Then he's kind of writing the part, where with Machine, just it forces you to be more creative and to think more outside the box to get to, like, because if you get him to be like, "Yes, that's what I was thinking in my head," it's like, that's insane that we somehow found a way to whatever the fuck he was hearing.
Oh, incredible. Absolutely incredible. And speaking of the early days as well, one thing I wanted to talk about, and it's something you've incorporated since as well, is that you've always kind of had song titles reflecting on random movie quotes or lines, or even sometimes just making fun of the band itself. Where did that idea originally come from? I mean, was it just at the start poking fun at each other and just trying to find titles for stuff?
Honestly, I think other bands were doing it at the time. And I don't think this was it. Like, the movie quote thing was not unique to us. That was not, you know, I think Fall Out Boy was doing it or something. And we were just like, yeah. I think Panic at the Disco had some fucking movie quote things.
I think it was like a sign of the times. I think we all had a go. I think we all had one from a random film.
Yeah. I think a lot of it too just came from the fact that when we were, so that all kind of started with Rise or Die Trying. So a lot of the things that became, I mean, For Your Strong isms, I guess, were started on that record with the really weird art that makes no fucking sense, and song titles being movies, like things, and all that stuff. And a lot of that kind of just came from the point where we're just like, anything that can be a talking point or anything that we can get people to just give us one more their attention. That's kind of what we were, I think, going for at the time. There's definitely things that we did that came back to bite us in the ass, because now we're like, "Oh, now this is a fucking thing that we have to do." Time, but yeah, I think that really was where we were coming from. Like, especially with the artwork, we were just on the cusp of, you know, people buying most of their music online, and so we were just like, I just want people to see the thumbnail of this and be like, "What the fuck is that?" And just make it bigger. And then that just gives us one more second of their time to try to win them over as a fan. And I think that's kind of going for with a lot of that stuff, whether it was on purpose or subconsciously, I don't really know. But retrospectively, I think that's kind of the vibe that we were trying to take.
That, and I think we did like the idea, like the whole movie quote thing and the weird artwork also stems from like not wanting to take ourselves too seriously, because we were very much at the time, I think we still are, though we take our music and our career seriously, we also do it because we like to enjoy what we do, right? We're not like, and at the time of coming up with song titles and stuff for Rise of Die Trying, I remember there was even worse movie quotes and stuff like that they were getting thrown around, that our label at the time was just like, yeah, maybe don't.
You can't say we're that.
Like, we're like Prepare to Be Digitally Manipulated, which is like the second song on Rise Red Trying, was originally called Can You Blow Me Where the Pampers Is? which is a quote from the movie PCU. And still to this day, we call it Blow Me. That's like, if you, any set list, I mean, we don't play that song all that often anymore, but if it's ever on a set list, it's Blow Me.
So you get a set list and it says Blow Me, it's Prepared to Be Digitally Manipulated.
Nice.
Oh, is there any other song titles that got rejected?
Well, I don't know. Not that I can think of on that album, okay. But like Dan was saying, like, we did that on that album. And then from every other album off of that, it was like, well, I guess we have to kind of do this movie quote thing. So what movie quotes are we going to use? So that's kind of why we didn't do it on this album, is because it kind of got to the point where it was like, we're just making a list of movie quotes of what we think are like sound cool. It has nothing to do with the like concept of what the song was about anymore or anything like that. So that's why we kind of like, we're like, okay, that's not an ingredient that is absolutely necessary at this point in our lives. So let's get rid of that one. Cause I don't think there are any movie quote ones. Are there? Other than technically, I guess the album title is from a movie, but it's not, it's kind of indirect how we came up with that as the album title. Even though it's kind of from a movie, it's not really because of the movie quote.
Yeah, I think with this record, we just worked so hard on it. I would say that the lyrics that like Alan and I worked on for this record are some of the most, I guess, personal and some of the most like real lyrics that we've ever written. And that was something we really worked for. When we're singing something, we want it to be for a reason. We want people to be able to listen to these songs and be like, okay, like I can relate to these because they're real. They're a real emotion. They're a real thought that's happening, not just something to fill the space or whatever, you know, like for when we did self-titled record, we wrote every lyric on that record was written in 3 days between the hours of like midnight and 5 o'clock in the morning, because we were in the studio and all the songs were tracked. And we're like, all right, I guess we got to write lyrics to these because we start recording in 3 days. So we just, wow.
It was a very stressful week.
Oh, so, I bet, yeah.
So, you know, we really wanted to make sure that everything on this record needed to feel on purpose, and that it was done for a reason, and that it was thought about and done, you know, with purpose. And when all these songs were done that we had like poured so much in, it kind of felt like wrong to just throw this title right in front of it. Like we're like, we did all this work and now we poured so much emotion and so much realism into this, and then we make the title something that just is, who fucking cares, something that's just forgettable, that's just like, oh, that's funny, that's from, you know, fucking Avengers or something, and then they're just gonna be like, oh, whatever. But now there's a title on there that actually has to do with the song, and I think it makes the song a little bit more believable, I guess.
Yeah. Awesome. Yeah. And one thing I wanted to mention as well is something that we found a lot of listeners really enjoy finding out is activities that band members like to do, or like side jobs or anything like that they have out of the band. Now, Alan, obviously you record artists yourself and record producer and everything, but we've got to talk about the Christmas trees. I mean, how did all of that start? Please tell us. This sounds fascinating.
It's not that fascinating, really.
Oh, come on. It is. It is to me. Brilliant. It is to me.
I mean, like how it got, how the whole idea got started is now that fascinating. So I guess if I go and pinpoint the moment where I was like, that, yeah, I want to do that. I've always loved Christmas and like kind of, I mean, Dan can probably attest to that. I've always been kind of like a weird freak about Christmas. But specifically, I was at a friend's wedding and I was sitting with Goose, the bass player of Polar Bear Club at the time. And he brought up how he was planning his wedding, and while he was going to the nursery where he got the flowers for his wedding. He ended up making friends with the guy that owned it. And they also sell Christmas trees. So he got this job selling Christmas trees for the winter, or for the holiday season. I was like, that sounds like the coolest job ever. And I'm always home around the holidays. So I went, like, I kind of did a little bit of research on my end of like searching for jobs selling Christmas trees at like existing places. And it was fucking September, so there was no jobs. Like, no one was posting anything about selling Christmas trees, but there was tons of information on how to start doing it yourself. That was at an interesting time. That was when the band like kind of broke up, and I was going through like some weird shit in my life where my wife was working. I was living in the city, and I was just home all day in my sweatpants doing nothing. And like every day my wife would come home and I'd be like investigating some new hobby that was really just distracting me from my depression. And one day she comes home from work and I'm like, we're going to sell Christmas trees. And oddly enough, she was like, fuck yeah, let's do it. Next thing you know, we're ordering like hundreds of Christmas trees from this farm up in Canada. And we get a truckload where Dan was helping me at the time build like this little hut out of like pallets that I would be like hanging out in and selling. And
did you like split your head open while we were doing that?
Yeah, I did. I walked into a clamp. Ooh. I still have a scar from it. But yeah, we just started doing it one year and it's turned into this thing that we now do every year. I think this will be our seventh year doing it. We're still ordering trees from other farms, but the hope once we got into it was to start growing our own trees. And 4 years ago now, we bought the farm that I live on now, started planting Christmas trees, and we plant new ones every year. And I think the tallest one now, because they grow like a foot a year, they take forever. The tallest ones we have now are probably like 3.5-4 feet tall. So we still got a few years till we're selling any of those. But now we sell them at our farm. We get them all from local, relatively local Massachusetts farms. And it's a pretty cool thing, I guess.
Yeah, it is awesome. It's awesome. It's yeah, we've spoke to loads of people about other jobs, but yeah, never Christmas tree farm. So yeah, that's a first.
It's something you never expect, like your favorite bands to be doing on the side. Right. I mean,
because it's fucking lame. You mean?
No,
it's just
no. Far from it.
How many trees do you have planted now?
I don't know. It's hard to keep track because they die, and then you plant more. We probably have like around 2,000 planted.
Whoa, you've got a Christmas tree forest.
Yeah, well, that's not that many. Like, when you talk about Christmas tree farms, like, that's pretty small scale.
Yeah, but that's a whole festival in the UK, 2,000 Christmas trees.
Yeah, well, I mean, we sell, like, 300 to 500 a year, you know, so 2,000 isn't going to last you very long when they take 8 years to grow.
Okay, yeah, you know? Okay, so maybe then, yeah.
That's true, yeah.
And that's why you plant... You plant a small amount every year. Well, small amount. Like, we plant like around 700 to 1,000. We're also learning as we go. So last year we planted, or 2 years ago, we planted 700 trees and every single one of them died. So we had to pull them all out and start over. We lost a year there, but you know, we're figuring it out as we go. But you plant them in stages so that when you do finally start selling them, you have some at this height and this height and this height. And that when you cut down this big one, next year this one will be a big one, you know.
Yeah. Nice.
All kinds of strategy behind it that I'm still figuring out.
Well, excited to see where it all goes. But just a couple more very quick things now, guys, before you go. I know we've mentioned that, you know, no one knows what the hell's going on in the world now, and it's hard to plan and talking to the labels and everything. But I did notice that Enemy of the World is 10 years old this year. Did you have any kind of celebrations to go along with it, or is there anything that you're thinking of doing now in these weird COVID times to kind of celebrate it in any way?
Well, we had kind of these tentative plans that we were going to do some 10-year anniversary tours. They weren't going to be during the 10 celebration because we didn't want to squash brain pain. So we were just like, yeah, we'll do, I mean, as long as we do it, no one's going to give a shit if it's like, oh, the 12-year anniversary, like, who cares? So that was kind of our plan. But now, who friggin' knows? I mean, we're always trying to come up with some way to accomplish the same tasks and the same goals that we had for the cycle, but obviously virtually or whatever. So we're trying to sort some things out. We're trying to be creative and find ways to celebrate that record and to make the people who are fans of that record and looking forward to it, you know, happy. But also, when this whole thing is over, are we going to do Enemy of the World anniversary tours? Sure. Maybe they're a 15-year anniversary, but we'll do them at some point for sure.
I'll tell you, if nothing else, this whole pandemic has definitely forced a lot of people to exercise their creative thinking, right? Like obviously with musicians, you got to think about how to do things outside the box. You're not able to do things the normal way, so you got to figure out a new way to do it. And that's happening everywhere. Like we have a friend that has a bakery that I talked to the other day that like they're kind of rethinking their whole business model and like trying to adapt to the times that is going to affect them long term. It's not just like how are we figuring this out for right now, but like everyone I think is going to be taking something away from this that could potentially benefit them long term. Like, you think online ordering at restaurants and pickup is going to die down after this? No, that's just like a new thing because it's fucking easy. It's better. It's better than having to call. I just do it on my phone and I walk in and it's there and it's ready. Why wouldn't I just do that forever now?
Sometimes you don't have to walk in. There's just a guy that hangs out outside. And when your car pulls up, he goes, are you picking up? Yeah, Becky. Yeah, sure. He just throws it at your window and you just get the
There was out. One place that I had to fill out on the website, what make and model, like what color my car was, because they just pull up and they know it's your shit and here you go. And it's kind of amazing. It's like, why would we go back to normal? This is easier. I could be an even lazier piece of shit now. I don't even have to get out of my car.
Yeah, the thing that sucks on, I guess, the end of people who are in the live entertainment industry is that, I mean, we're basically going to be the last people who get to go back to work. And I think that's the most frustrating is everybody kind of gets to figure out a way to adapt to the times and still find a way to continue what they were doing in a slightly, you know, ajar way where we are still in this, like, yeah, we're trying to do all these things virtually, but the bread and butter of what we are and what a lot of bands and live entertainment people are is a, like, everyone has to be in the same room to make this thing and to have that, the connection that everybody is wanting when they go to a live show. So I think that's the most frustrating part about, you know, when you see all the, when you see people being like, you know, I don't believe it's real, or I'm not going to wear a mask, or it's like, it sucks. Cause all they're doing is just pushing the ball just further and further down the field of when we actually get to like start day one. You know what I mean? And that's the most frustrating part is everybody kind of gets to have these, like, we're operating at like 50% of what we do normal, like as restaurant goes, or like a business where they're like, oh, we can only have 10 people in the store at a time. It's like, that's cool. But like, we're not playing shows to, and only allowing 10 people in the room. Like that's, there's just, it's just flatlined. You know what I mean? And that's the most frustrating part about the whole thing is, I know everybody wishes that they knew what the end date was going to be, but the thing that sucks about us is the end date is actually the start date for us. You know what I mean? It's not just like when we get to go back to normal. It's like when we get to start figuring out what the fuck we get to do. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I feel like the music industry in general is just, has just been getting fucked for years because, you know, when the decline of purchasing music started, the industry, like, turned, like, just like found a new road to drive down, and that was live music. It's like, how do we make it so that now that is where everyone makes money? And labels went to taking 360 deals where they were taking money from touring and merchandise sales and stuff like that, and artists and managers and things like that were rethinking strategic methods of like, okay, let's go out on tour to promote this new album that we want to sell. No, that's not the model anymore. Now it's, let's make an album so that we have a reason to go out on tour and make money and keep the fucking gears turning. But now we don't even fucking have that, you know? It's like, so what do we do as an industry to, you know, I mean, industry is a funny word because when you think of that, word, you think about like the fucking head honchos, the freaking millionaires out in the world, but that are profiting off of music. But there's such a small version of that, which is people like Dan and I who make a living, a not that fucking crazy living, right?
Yeah.
Making music and touring. That's how we make a living, you know? Just like other people have 9-to-5 jobs, we go out on the road and it's not always fun. It's not like, you know, not that I would trade it for anything in the world, but being on tour, especially at times in our career, we were gone away from home for 10 months a year, is not always easy. It's not always glamorous. Like sometimes it fucking sucks.
I would give anything to be playing a shithole, smelly venue, getting covered in my own sweat and sleeping for 8 hours just in my own disgustingness just to do it again tomorrow. Like I would kill
you. Yeah. I would play to about 3 people now. Well, not even 3. I'd play to 1. Do you know what? I just like to rehearse. Just in a rehearse in a room, I can just throw myself about in right now because I just need to get it out. I'm busting to play gigs again.
I've wondered about this whole drive-in situation that people are doing. But like, I don't know. Maybe it makes sense for
not enough drive-ins. It's like maybe like 11 in the whole country.
But there is one right down the street from our house, Dan.
No, there is one right down. That's the thing. There's like 11 in the entire country. 3 of them are in Massachusetts, and 1 of them is in New Hampshire.
So we're good.
Dinosaur Jr. is playing in New Hampshire, I think, at the New Hampshire one, like next weekend.
Really? I just can't tell if that would be any fun for our fans or us.
I don't think it works because, like, for that to work, it has to be the type of band that you would just enjoy watching, not
part.
And with our live shows, that I think the thing that makes them what they are is the participation between the crowd and us feeding off of each other's energy. Like, even as far as like we go, like there's no way that we could get up on a drive-in stage and play for a bunch of cars and have the same enthusiasm.
I have an idea.
Okay, here we go.
We play a live outdoor show.
Okay, I'm with you.
But we hire like a carnival company to bring in bumper cars. So everyone has their own bubble, right? Everyone can't touch each other. You're in your little car, but you're just driving into each other, right? And you're just fucking bumping each other around.
Yeah.
But okay. Well, what about? I'm gonna take that idea. I'm running with this now. This has become a Zoom business meeting now. Fuck the podcast. The podcast was never going anywhere. Fuck it. Anyway, what about 1 meter thick Zorb suits? So like the Zorb balls.
Yeah.
If you had a meter and they've got a meter, you're 2 meters apart. Fucking chaos, pits, the lot.
A day to remember was way ahead of their time.
Yeah, it's true, eh?
Yeah, they were, yeah.
Jeremy had that shit figured out long ago.
Jeremy knew.
Everybody else is fucked, but Jeremy would have been protected.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, I'm not saying a day to remember started the pandemic, but it's looking likely. It's looking likely.
I mean, we just need to invest in hazmat suits, right? If everybody at the show just wears a hazmat suit, crowd surf to your heart's content. Who cares?
Yes.
Everybody's just in a suit that's airtight. You can't get what's inside. You can still mosh and do whatever the heck you want to do. Just you're in a suit. You're in your own little hat.
Hazmat or dive-in suits only. Oh, it says
they have little vents at the bottom to drain the sweat out of.
Oh, by the last song, you just got heavy, wet legs. Oh, it's dreadful. Dreadful.
Everyone will lose weight.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
There's many uses for this now.
Yeah,
we should look into this.
There's got to be some sort of a 4-year strong exercise pit or something that we can make out of this. I'm gonna think more about this. Awesome. Cool.
Oh, amazing, guys. Yeah.
Any more, Mog?
No, that's. I've loved every second of this. It's been an absolute pleasure. Thank you so much for taking the time. Best of luck with everything now, and hopefully it won't be too long until you can actually come back over here and we can all have a giant mosh party together.
Sounds good.
Fingers crossed.
Yes, please. Can we please do one of these in the flesh when you come over? I think
I think
that'd be really fun. And oh yeah, Alan, I was telling Dan before before you came earlier. In the UK, there's a guy called Alan Partridge who's like a comedy character.
Yeah, and I know him.
There's a famous scene where he's in a car park and he sees his friend Dan and he's just yelling Dan for about a minute straight. I need you after this to please go and watch it because it's hilarious.
Okay. Well, isn't there the Alan one too?
Alan.
Oh yeah, that's the there's like a marmoset or something. Yeah. Like there's some sort of animal. Like, Alan. Yeah, there's that one as well. But yeah, I think the Dan one, the Alan doing Dan, kind of came first. But yeah, check it out. It's very, very funny.
Love that.
But yeah, thank you very, very much for doing this, boys. It's been very insightful, very funny, and yeah, it's been awesome. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
Having us, Sean, awesome. With the single drop.
Yes, thank you very much. I'm going to need it. I'm definitely going to need it. For fucks. But yeah, cool. Thank you, guys. Thank you.
No problem. Bye.
See ya. You're listening
to Sappy Podcast. Yeah. Yes, 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 yes. And of course, yes.
Yes, yes, Y-E-S. Yes, that was... yes, yes, F-Y-S. That was 4 years strong. Thank you very much to Dan and Alan. I had a fucking great time. I had a really good time. I wasn't sure how it was going to go in the beginning, especially with the awkwardness with Alan just having passed his COVID test.
Yeah. Congratulations.
By passed, I mean he's negative. Yeah. I just realised that.
He doesn't have COVID.
COVID.
Yes.
No.
There we are.
He did test positive for awesomeness. So that was cool. It was super cool to see him. And yeah, we had a lovely chat with Dan before Alan came in that broke the ice and stuff. And yeah, oh yeah, we talked about rumours, didn't we?
We
talked about rumours about the bands. We didn't get into that in the chat. What did he say was his favourite rumour he'd heard about himself?
Oh, that they were all like, when they started, because of the beards, they were all like 47. People, they were like 19 and 21 and stuff, and everyone was like, oh, those beards are too good. They're 47.
Unbelievable, and also they thought that somebody said they were Trump supporters as well, when obviously they're clearly not. But yeah, thanks again to Alan and Dan. What a fucking great chat. Lovely guys. I really hope we get to do one in the flesh when we can.
Yes.
That would be fantastic. Hopefully Raiders get to play some shows at some point with 4 years strong as well, because I think that could be fun.
That would be a good one. I'd like to see the atmosphere for that. But of course, if you haven't picked up a copy of 4 Year Strong's latest record, Brain Ping, then what are you waiting for? It's absolutely insane. You'll get you through these weird, weird times, and they're excellent dudes. And of course, Hassle Records are reissuing their debut album, Rise or Die Trying, for the label's 15th year anniversary, and you can pre-order a copy of that on limited edition multicolor vinyl extravaganzas at hasslerecords.com. So 4 years strong, doing everything they possibly can to still be awesome, and they are.
Yes they are. Well done to all of those people involved. We are now best friends, whether you like it or not, so there you go.
Oh, incredible. But speaking of best friends as well, Sean, another reminder that your new single, Destructobot by Raiders, is available now. So if you've
What's
waited,
that going to do with best friends?
That's true. None of your best friends are in Raiders, are they? You like Bob, because you've stuck with Bob for, like, you've been with Bob for years. Like,
no, I hate Bob.
Styx? What do you feel about Styx?
I like Styx, because he's the only one who might listen to this.
Aye, Styx, love you.
But, they can't see that, can they? I've done that to you. We know. Ryan and Bob, I hate them, actually. Oh. And if I ever see them again in public, I'm going to fight them on sight. So, they won't hear this, so they're in for a treat when I see them. But yeah, Raiders Band UK on everything. On Twitter, Instagram, Facebook. Have a look at Raiders UK on Spotify if you're listening to this on Saturday. If you're not, if it's Friday, The song is out, raidersbanduk.bandcamp.com. Please consider purchasing it on the Friday, because all the money goes to the artist, and the artist is me. And by me, I mean the rest of the band, because we need to pay for the recordings and everything that we've done.
Oh.
So, yes, please check it out. Thank you very much. I'll stop talking about it right now.
Oh, I love this. I love every single thing. And if you're on social media anyway, give us a follow at Sapnin Pod on the Twitter, at Instagram. It's at SAPPENINPOD.
Bloody hell.
Who would have thought, Sean? Yeah. Who would have thought?
Not me. Yeah, if you've enjoyed any of the past 94 technically with a bonus one, 94 episodes of this nonsense, that's content and nonsense, that I've trademarked, so don't go using it, because I have trademarked it, don't look it up, and you think, oh, I'd like to support these idiots somehow, check out patreon.com/sapnin, where you can give as little as a cup of coffee for me and Morgan to help get around, make this podcast better. Traveling, remember last week we traveled and it was absolutely pointless because the guest didn't turn up.
We did get a nice video out of it that is available on our Patreon page.
Correct. Also, great advertising here. So check it out, patreon.com/sapnin. SAPPENIN.
Yeah, there's loads of bonuses on there, extra content. You can get goodies from us. But most importantly, you can join a community that we bloody love, who celebrate each other, who help each other, support each other, and will become your new best friends if you like it or not. So that's patreon.com/sapnin. And while we're mentioning those beautiful bastards, why don't you head over to the description of this episode? There's loads of them we need to thank. There's loads of names in there that we would like to thank. But we need to give a mahoosive shout out to the elite members of our Patreon community. Those are the top tiers. And Sean is about to name their weird name changes so that we sound silly right about now, I guess.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Right, let's have a look. Thank you very much to the amazing Kylie Wheeler, Mayumi Liwoe, Mitch Perry, Emma Barber, Janelle Skeletons on Society Caston, Amadine Obana, Sarah, can't believe you two knobs didn't get the Marilyn Monroe references last week. Sorry, I said Marilyn Manson because I was looking at a picture the same time I was reading Marilyn Monroe. Thanks to Nathan Croshaw, Kelly Young, happy birthday Thursday, you amazing chica. Who's that? Oh, it's Kelly. Is it her birthday Thursday? Anyway, which has just gone. Dilly Swanlegs Grimwood. Ohio is for Emo Chester. Michael Engler. Liam Connolly. Drew Styles. The Cult of David Dickinson. Kelly Irwin. The Maxin Dancing Champion. Kate Gentleman Prefers Ginger's Puttocks. Johnny Phillips. Scott the Antichrist Jones. Simon Amos. Ollie Spilled the Blood Amesbury. Kate Stevenson. Samuel Griffiths. Jenny Munster. Emily Senegals. Lucy Deeds. Martina McManus. John and Emma. Kelly Mallory. Becky Andy. Erin Howard. Louis Cook. Marcy Jacobson. Jason Heredia. Done it again. Sandra Kuacek, Mike Cunningham, Charles Pendlebury, BA Honours, Livy Cropper, James McNaught, Tallulah Grant, Stuart McNaught, Kelly Cannon, Lydia Henderson, Tony Michael, and Jenny Robinson. If your name's not on that list, and it's normally on that list, it might be because at the moment it is currently September 2nd, and I think Patreon takes a a minute to process some people's membership. So if I've missed you out on this one, I am so sorry, but we do love you, and yes, that'll be sorted by next week. But also, I wanted to say I've been messaged by Becky Mayoko, who's one of the patrons, and she wanted me to wish Paul Hirschfield a happy birthday because it's his birthday apparently.
Oh
yeah, I believe he's 275.
So no, come on, he's not a day past 274.
I don't know. He's looking more like the Crypt Keeper from Tales from the Crypt every day. Anyway, big love to Paul Hirschfield. Thank you very much for being a friend, a Patreon, and a brother. Thank you very much to all those people. We love you all very, very much. We love everybody in the group. I cannot stress this enough. You're all fucking superstars. Thank you so, so, so much for your support and love. It means the world to me and Morgan.
Yes, we love you more than life itself. More than 4 years strong, have awesome beards. That calculation is how much we love you. I fucked that up completely, but you can understand what I mean. Come on, we love you. That's the base. That's the bottom line, because Mo Dick said so.
Oh, fuck me. It's all gone wrong. Anyway, thank you very much for listening to episode 93 of Sapling Podcast with Sean Smith and Morgan Richards. Hopefully, we will see you next week. If you haven't checked out the other episodes, please do check it out. There's loads of different bands, artists, comedians, wrestlers, actors and stuff to check out. So yeah, please check it out, and yeah, we'll see you next week, I guess.
Yeah, and if you're good at maths, then you'll realize that episode 100 is fast approaching, and we've got a lot of little celebrations in plan, trying to sort some things out. So you better hit that subscribe button, because you'll get notifications about everything straight away. So thanks for listening. You're all awesome. Let's celebrate everything while we can. I don't know what that meant.
Oh my god, that's very pessimistic of you.
Like we're all going to die. Forever. Like we're all going to die.
Yeah. Try not to die between now and next week's episode, please. If you do, let us know at Sapling Pod. Right, let's go. Sapling!
Sapling!
You're listening to Sapling Podcast with Sean Smith and Morgan Richards. Thank you very much for downloading this podcast or streaming it, or I don't know what else you do with podcasts. Thank you very much.